When you're looking at the number one prospects in each and every organization, there are a few that I would think of that are more interesting, more intriguing, more difficult maybe to analyze than Giants' number one prospect, first baseman Bryce Eldridge, who possesses some of the best power in the game. He is going to be today's Baseball America prospect profile as we look at the number one prospect in each and every MLB organization. Jeff, when it comes to Bryce Eldridge, two-way player in high school who a lot of people thought we were going to be talking about, the 6'7", the massive pitcher, but then he just kept hitting home run after home run and after home run, and kind of wanted also to, he really wanted to hit. To his credit, he's kept on doing it, made the majors at the end of last year. Not exactly the MLB debut that he would really want to remember, but it was a very brief one. But when you look at Bryce Eldridge and you look ahead, I feel like that this is a guy who, even though he's made the majors, the range of potential outcomes here range everywhere from wins, home run titles, to, okay, it just didn't all seem to come together. How much risk and how much reward do you see in Bryce Eldridge?
We can start the conversation by just getting this out of the way. I mean, it is one of the best power profiles in the minor leagues. High-end exit velocities, of course, are very, very good. He hits the ball hard at exceptional angles. His hard hit launch angle was 18.2 degrees last year in the minors. That was across 433 plate appearances as well. Where I find him to be really fascinating, it's like an Aaron Judge level average exit velocity last year in the minors, and a fairly large sample too. It was 95 miles per hour was his average exit velocity. He hits the ball really, really hard consistently. His average contact is a hard hit ball, essentially. So I think you got to keep that in mind. That said, there is quite a bit of swing and miss in the profile. It's kind of at that level where it can go either way, which is what I think makes it even more questionable. In the minor leagues, it was kind of at that level where this can get just incrementally better in the major leagues, and he'll consistently get to power, but will probably run, a high 20s to a low 30 strikeout rate from year to year, with decent swing decisions. He's not fully like a three true outcome kind of guy. That said, I think you sort of look at how young he is. He's had a lot of minor league time, but only across a couple of seasons, really. So he moved really quickly. I think you got to take some of the struggles in the major leagues with a grain of salt. There's also, a corner infield duo in San Francisco right now after the Rafael Devers trade a year ago that, the urgency of Eldridge having to get up there and man first base for them, isn't quite as, code red as it seemed to be a year ago. So I do think there's some time for Eldridge to kind of get some of the, sort of kinks out in the swing, et cetera. But there is a fair amount of hit tool risk here, but it does come along with exceptional power. And sometimes it just takes a little bit longer, that it could look like it's a bust for a couple years. And then all of a sudden at 25, 26 years old, Eldridge just breaks out. So it could be a little bit longer road here. But I also don't want to write off that he could make those incremental improvements within, the next 6 to 12 months and, all of a sudden has a massive year in 27. I think it would be unlikely, JJ, that he would have a big year in 26. I don't know if you disagree with that or not.
No, I think that that makes a lot of sense. So this is where this is fascinating, right? You just said, like, we're not saying he's Aaron Judge. No one's Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is just wrapping up in the last couple of years, and obviously he probably could continue it for a while longer, but he's been one of the best hitters in baseball history in recent years. But he is also instructive for Bryce Eldridge. I do think Aaron Judge is a better athlete, even though, as we said, Eldridge was a true two-way player and a prospect both as a pitcher and a hitter. But Aaron Judge never slugged 500 in the minors and did not graduate as a rookie until he was 25. Bryce Eldridge is 21. So when you talk about someone with long levers like this, when you talk about someone with the strike zone, the size that Bryce Eldridge has, there is some swing and miss here. A 29% K rate last year, while high, is not absurd for the level of production for what we've seen power-wise from him. The other part that's going to be interesting to watch here is, you mentioned it, Devers is now there. I think that that could be very helpful for Ed Eldridge now that Devers says he's willing to play first base, because the other question for Eldridge in the short term, he made improvements last year. In 2024, he made 18 errors at first base. That is a number of errors that you simply cannot make at first base and play in the major leagues. He had that to 9 last year. He's improved as a first baseman, but at the same time, it is not something that he's an exceptional first baseman. Big target, but not an exceptional first baseman by any stretch of the imagination. Being able to DH when he comes up more days than he plays first base, probably a good thing right now. I do want to also acknowledge another thing that was impressive that he did last year. Big lefty like that, you wouldn't be surprised at all to see him really struggle against left-handed pitchers. Made real improvements in that in 2025. We saw some, you know, kind of concerns with that in 24. Took a step forward in 25 and really kind of, I wouldn't say put that kind of concern behind him, but definitely improved it. And the other thing that we do want to acknowledge here, this is a guy who has hit for power wherever he's played. 23 homers in 116 games in 2024, 25 in 102 games in the minors in 25. And that's while we're doing that, while reaching levels, he reached AAA in 24 as a teenager. He spent all of last year at AA and AAA. He's been one of the youngest players in every league he's ever played in. He's doing this while effectively learning to play a position, because he really was more of a pitcher who also hit in high school. There's a lot here to say, like, that he's 21. Let's see what this guy looks like at 23, 24, 25. But Jeff, like, it's also not crazy to think, if you want to dream on the upside here, there aren't a whole lot of guys who play in San Francisco, especially in, you know, hitting to the Bay. There's not a whole lot of guys who can get you to 30, 35 homers. We don't see that very often there. Bryce Eldridge is someone, there's not a park made. There's not a park that's been built that can hold him in when he really connects with a baseball.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at the power and just on a true talent perspective, it's 50 home run upside. You really want to dream on it. I think you can dream on this guy, you know, having 50 home run seasons and, you know, leading the major leagues in home runs. That's what the upside is. It's just a matter of, can he get to, you know, the power consistently enough to do that? And yeah, I mean, it's a tough place to hit home runs, but, you know, not unheard of. And, you know, there's huge natural power here. And the ability to hit the ball to all parks of the ballpark too. So I think you look at Eldridge as somebody that, yeah, could definitely be feeding some guys out in the kayaks in McCovey Cove looking to sell some baseballs.
So you mentioned his average EV. That was in the 100th percentile of all minor league hitters last year. His 90th EV was in the 95th percentile, and his max EV was in the 93rd percentile. This is a guy who hits the ball as hard as anyone. That's what makes him such an intriguing prospect, and someone who's already reached the majors at a very young age. That is Bryce Eldridge, the number one prospect in the Giants organization, and another of these Baseball America prospect profiles. We're rolling out one of these a day. Please like and subscribe. Do check out the Baseball America podcast feed and YouTube channel for more of these, because we're doing one for all 30 orgs. And if you enjoyed this, I promise you also will enjoy the Baseball America prospect podcast deep dives that we have done for each and every organization as well. We're taking a look at the state of every farm system as we head into the 2026 season. For Jeff, I'm JJ. Thank you, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. We are taking a look at the number one prospect in each and every organization. Jeff Ponce, JJ Cooper here, and we are taking a look at Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder, number one prospect, Ryan Waldschmidt. Jeff, I look at Ryan and I can't help but think that, you know, we're going to see him in the big leagues this year. Just the question is just going to be, is it going to be opening day? Is it going to be a little bit longer? But especially when I look at that D-backs outfield, I feel very comfortable in thinking that he's going to get there. What are D-backs fans, what can they expect once he does arrive?
Yeah, I think just a really well-rounded profile. And, you know, a good athlete, a guy that's improved as a defender in the outfield, still not the most, you know, standout defender out there. But I think good enough to hold down a corner spot pretty consistently. He's got legs to kind of make up on maybe some subpar jumps at times, but it's really at the plate where Waldschmidt kind of makes his noise. And, you know, good contact skills, elite swing decisions. He's a guy that, you know, really knows how to discern balls from strikes consistently. He's fairly aggressive in the zone, despite chasing just 15.8% of the time this year across all levels, which is a really impressive number. There's power here as well. Say it's more above average. The angles are good, not great. But he's a guy that knows how to hit and I think has all the ingredients to kind of make things work at the plate once he gets up to the big leagues. Might take a couple of years for him to really fully hit his stride. I think there's probably some more strength gains that will come as well. But this is a guy that hit a ball last year, 116. So the top end exit velocities are there. You know, the hitting ingredients are there. He plays a position. I think he's a guy that can come up and right off the bat be an average regular with some ceiling for a little bit more as he progresses in his major league career.
The thing that does stand out to me is, like you mentioned, the OBP. I mean, kind of, he really does control the strike zone. That is the part where I think that if you said, how does he going to make the biggest impact, especially early on? This is a guy, some good parks that he's played in, and we'll admit that, some leagues that are a little bit offensive, but he's never posted a sub 400 OBP at any stop in the minor league so far. It is a 426 career minor league on base percentage, 288 batting average, 460 slug. So, like, again, everything's pretty well rounded there. But Jeff, like, when you look at the swing decisions, the thing that stands out to me is this isn't a guy who's just kind of throwing the bat on his shoulder and saying, okay, bad pitchers, I can take my walks. There's a zone awareness and ability and understanding of knowing what pitches to hit. And obviously that will diminish a little bit, I would say, at the big league level, because those pitchers are better, the stuff is better. But I do think if you said, how is this guy going to make an offensive impact, even if he's 10, 15 homers, he could be a pretty well-rounded offensive player because he can run, he can steal a bag, but more than anything, this man knows how to get on base, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of puts him into a prime position to project as a good leadoff hitter potentially for the Diamondbacks for a whole lot of years. Guy that does get on base, as you said, you know, he's not a base clogger at all. And I think even if like those walk rates drop down a little bit, as we expect they will once he gets to the majors, I think his swing decisions are such that he's still going to post really good on base percentages, really high walk rates comparatively to the rest of the league. And, you know, if he gets a little bit more aggressive in zone, which he's pretty aggressive in zone now, you know, it's not, as you said, it's not like he's one of these passive guys where it's a really low in zone swing rate and he never chases. It's not like he's keeping the bat in his shoulder that frequently, you know, and swinging that infrequently. He's a guy that does attack in zone. So as he sees more strikes, he sees more hittable pitches. I think that's going to lead to more impact, more production as well. So it's kind of a give and take there. But I think eventually over time, pitchers will have to respect, you know, how good his eyes are at the plate and his ability to establish the zone. And especially now that we're seeing the challenge system, this is a guy with a skill like this where, you know, they're probably going to give him the green light to challenge balls and strikes consistently. And that's a dangerous element and component of each at bat now. I think we're seeing that more and more in some of these spring training games.
The other thing I'll note with this is the opportunity, as we said, is kind of there, at least in the short term, that kind of gives him a little bit, maybe foot in the door. Lourdes Gurriel's coming off of an injury, kind of rehabbing, although he looks like he may be a little bit ahead of schedule. Corbin Carroll obviously went down very early in spring training, although again, not expected to be out for that long, but opens up the opportunity. The other part here is that with Waldschmidt, I would say though that, like, don't be discouraged at all if he goes, he hasn't played AAA yet. This is not something where if he goes to AAA to start the season, that's perfectly fine and actually kind of almost makes some sense. Obviously, the D-backs are also trying to make Jordan Lawler into an outfielder and maybe, you know, a multi-position guy. And so maybe that kind of makes sense to say the guy who's spent more time on the IL but also more time in AAA than anyone wants to kind of gets the first shot while Waldschmidt gets that first taste of AAA. But it is hard to imagine him not reaching the big leagues at some point this year. And I would say overall, Jeff, when I look at this D-back system, a lot of outfielders in this, the top of this list. But the other thing I would say is it just feels like it is. They made a couple of astute trades last year at the deadline. Feels like it's a little deeper overall than it was at this time last year.
Yeah, I do think that's true. Acquired some nice pitching pieces in the Merrill Kelly deal, and then were able to bring Merrill Kelly back on a free agent deal. So real even Steven one on that one. I think you look at some of the draft picks. They have guys like Lawler, who at this point have not really technically graduated. Well, technically graduated, but still kind of feel like a prospect. I think you look at guys like that, and you're like, all right, there's a variety of prospects in this system, and a variety of young players that could supplement the major league roster.
Other thing that kind of works out here as well, we actually see a little bit of a dearth of right-handed hitting outfielders who are really productive. There's a little bit less of those, seems like, these days than usual. And Walschmidt does fit that as well, might fit into that lineup as well. And the other part of this is you hit on the athleticism here, right? This is a guy who they're trying in center field. I think you probably have a guy long-term who's a better center fielder, but defensively there is kind of a lot of versatility here as well, I would say, which kind of fits in this. It's also valuable from a standpoint of, obviously, you have Corbin Carroll, you have a star there in the outfield, but this is a guy who could kind of fit for you if mid-season there's an opening because of injury or whatever. It's like, hey, we need a left fielder. Well, Walschmidt can do that. Hey, we need a center fielder. Okay, maybe not ideally, but yes, he could do that. Need a right fielder, he could do that. This is a guy who's got multi-position versatility as well. You put all that together, and what you're talking about here is a guy who, while there are, there are prospects who rank higher up on the top 100 than Ryan Walschmidt, but when you are talking about guys who we expect to see an impact from in 2026, there's not a ton that I would say that come to mind who we would say that are going to have much more chance to make an impact than Ryan Walschmidt. On base percentage, some power there that probably going to develop athleticism as well. And that is why he is the number one prospect in the Arizona Diamondbacks farm system. So if you enjoy this one, please do check it out. We are rolling out a prospect profile in each and every organization all through the spring training. And by the way, if you're watching this one, we got a lot of them already up. So go check out the other prospect profiles, and please share this video and like and subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel, and check out all of our coverage also at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. Hello, everybody. We are here for another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. Jeff Ponce, JJ Cooper, and we are taking a look today at Colorado Rockies' number one prospect, Ethan Holliday. Ethan Holliday was considered, the younger brother of Jackson Holliday, the son of Matt Holliday. This is a very distinguished baseball family that has had a more first round picks than almost anyone else, other than maybe, I guess you could say, the Boones, but the Boones, some of those were before the draft, I would say. So one of the most distinguished baseball families we've seen over the last 100 years. And we have in Ethan Holliday also one of the premium power prospects from the 2025 high school draft class. Jeff, when you look at, I would also say, though, not a great debut. And I would say with that, though, this is an opportunity. This is why there kind of is a new regime in Colorado, is the Rockies have struggled to help, I would say, kind of the power first prospects develop. This is, I would say, an opportunity for this new Rockies front office and coaching staff to try to help. Okay, let's get Ethan Holliday really rolling after a little bit of a rough debut, but also I would say maybe one that was kind of putting him a little bit further out than he needed to be in that first season instead of Bridgley.
Yeah. And I think, that's a big part of it, right? You look at a player like Holliday, he was obviously incredibly highly billed, all throughout, his high school career. And I think there were some question marks that started to come in a little bit regarding the hit tool. No one's ever questioned the power. I don't think anyone's ever questioned the work ethic or any of that sort of thing. But I do think his profile was different from his brothers. He's probably not a guy who's going to stick in the middle infield. He's not a contact hitter with some speed, which is what Jackson is, really high baseball IQ. I think he's more like his dad. He's more like a corner infielder, maybe a corner outfielder, because he does have a big arm and maybe moves, you know, there. But there's potential for this guy to hit, you know, 25 to 30 home runs. And I think you really have to focus on developing him, getting to enough bat to ball ability and, you know, keeping those swing decisions that are pretty good intact so he can consistently get to his power. Because there is 30 home run upside here. But I think we do need to adjust our expectations a little bit. This isn't necessarily a Corey Seager. You know, it might be more of, you know, your 30 home run, you know, third baseman that's maybe like a fringy defender at third, like a Eugenio Suarez or someone like that. That's a really good outcome. That's an MLB All-Star. And I still think the potential is there. But there are hit tool questions here. And I think that the new regime's job is to get those ironed out and to make sure that Holiday is in the best position to succeed, because the old regime certainly did not put him in the best position to succeed following the draft.
And we say that like a lot of the first round high school players went to Bridge League. And again, Holiday, you know, like was kind of thrown out, you know, went to the Cal League, which not that I don't want to make it sound like that. That's an absurd assignment for a top of the draft prep hitter. But at the same time, it was one that he was, you know, he did have some struggles with swing and miss there. And it's something where, if that was happening in Bridge League, I think it would have been a little easier to kind of work through some of those swing decisions, work through some of kind of clearing up. He kind of was adjusting his swing a lot during that time. The other part that you note here is when we've talked to evaluators, we talked to scouts, like there's been kind of a consistent, like, I know he's drafted as a shortstop. There's really never been a part of this where the general belief was that this was a shortstop. As you said, this is expected to be a corner down the road. Now you could say, is that a corner infielder? Is that a corner outfielder? But that's what he's long been expected to be. It's a different body type than his older brother. I mean, this is not a up the middle body type long-term. This is a slugger. This is a guy who, if you say, as you said, kind of like what your good outcome is here, is that Ethan Holiday is going to be a guy who hits tanks, who hits a whole lot of home runs. And that's something where, again, it's the swing decisions. It's getting him to a swing where he can do that very consistently. And, you know, I think that this is also, Jeff, kind of worthy of bringing in Charlie Condon as well. I'm very intrigued to see kind of how the Rockies like kind of developed this year. Like it's going to be one of the more fascinating kind of storylines, I feel like, of 2026, because let's just be straightforward about it. Like take Condon and Holiday out of it for a minute. This is an organization that's really had a lot of top picks, top 10 picks over the last decade that have not really kind of come together. And you can't keep missing on top 10 picks and have that not leave a mark. I mean, this is something where, you know, they don't have Drew Romo in the organization anymore. We're seeing Zach Veen trying to, you know, is admittedly kind of in a kind of a hopefully a bounce back season this year. Benny Montgomery hasn't really developed. Riley Pint, you know, was a top pick who's now a Padre. There's a lot of these guys. What do you think with, let's say, Holiday and Condon, like when you look at like what a new regime, what a new coaching staff, what a new development staff can do, what is it that most needs to kind of happen here?
Yeah. And I mean, not knowing the ins and outs of, you know, what the day-to-day and player development and backfield work and like all that sort of stuff is with the Rockies. But from what I've heard from covering the Rockies for several years and just obviously the conversations that we have with folks throughout the game, I think a lot of it is just, you know, focusing on consistent processes and, you know, pillars of player development that you believe in. I think that we saw big gains for the Red Sox on the pitching and hitting development side when they really started to streamline their focus on certain qualities. And, you know, that might be different from player to player. And, you know, they've hired some folks in their player development group, you know, over the last few months since the new regime has come in. And I think it's interesting because with both of these players, they're kind of similar profiles. Like, you know, I think there's a chance that Condon could play a few different spots, probably ends up at first base long-term just based on his body type, you know, being a little bit bigger than Holiday is, a little bit less arm as well. But, you know, you're talking about guys with power over hit profiles, with good on base skills that just need to make more consistent contact. There were some gains last year for Charlie Condon. He didn't have a terrible 2025 by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think getting to more contact for him and just getting his swing in a more consistent place, more repeatable place, and just maybe getting some more adjustability between the two. I think some of it was timing for Holiday, just kind of breaking down the swing, talking to some swing coaches about it in recent days, actually kind of looking at like where could Holiday make some gains. And I think a lot of it was just timing based. And you know, maybe just not being necessarily ready to see the velocity or, you know, the spin that he was seeing. So I think this is all fixable stuff. I think for the organization, it's going to depend from player to player. They do have talented players in this organization. I don't think it's a lack of talent, but I do think it's been a lack of modern processes and focus. And, you know, hopefully some of that stuff will kind of move closer to the median at this point. And I think ultimately it could lead to, you know, much more consistent production from homegrown players for the Rockies.
The other thing I'll kind of end it with this is that we saw it with Jackson Holiday coming out of his summer showcase season before his senior year of high school, where he kind of made some adjustments and really then kind of took off. This is a family where they have, like, they love to live in the, they live in the batting cage. I know and expect that Ethan Holiday spent a lot of time, a lot of work this offseason, like knowing, okay, I've got a to-do list for 2026. And now we'll get to see in the 2026 season kind of what emerges from that. That is Ethan Holiday, our number one prospect in the Colorado Rockies system and another of our Baseball America prospect profiles. If you enjoyed this one, we are doing one of these for each and every of all 30 MLB teams, the number one prospect. Check it out at the Baseball America YouTube channel. And we're also rolling out podcasts of this as we put the divisions together. So if you want to hear it on the podcast feed, you can do that as well. Hear it in your car when you're driving around. And on top of that, do check out all the content over at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody. Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles, as we are taking a look at the number one prospect in each and every organization. And today we are looking at San Diego Padres catcher Ethan South, number one prospect in the Padres organization, the number one prospect who's been that number one prospect for quite a while, a massive prospect coming out of the international market back in 2023. And this is something the Padres do, but Ethan South, to his credit, handled it, was pushed to the minors on the U.S. very quickly. Was kind of the story of spring training in 2024. Never will forget that first video. I think Josh Norris sent us of him catching a bullpen, I think big league pitchers. And it's like, wait, this is this teenager who is catching velo, and it makes it look like he's got the softest hands I've ever seen. He's kind of shown that defense for years, but the real kind of question is we have going into 26, the real wish that we have for Ethan Salas, and I'm sure the Padres do too, is for a healthy season, because he's coming off of a very injury plagued 2025. It's been a while since Ethan Salas has kind of been able to get on a roll, get comfortable, and just hit. How important, how pivotal, I don't want to say too pivotal, Jeff, because he is still really young, but how important is this 2026 season and Ethan Salas getting healthy and getting back on track?
Yeah, I think it is paramount importance. You know, it's been one really disappointing offensive year in 2024, where, you know, ended up repeating some levels. Some of that was because he was kind of pushed to where there were some games at the end of the 2023 season, but really didn't show a whole lot at the plate. Was kind of underwhelming in AFL as well. And then got hurt last year and missed most of the season. So I think when you look at Salas, you need him to come back, be fully healthy, and show that there's just, you know, average offensive production. And I think that kind of, you know, kicks things back into gear. There's never been much question around the receiving or the throwing or the blocking. The defense behind the plate is buttery smooth. I mean, this was a guy that actually got into big league spring training games before his 17th birthday. Has always played, you know, well above his age defensively. I don't think there's a lot of questions there. And I think that's one of the reasons, despite two pretty difficult seasons in 24 and then obviously the injury played campaign in 2025, he remains the number one prospect in this Padres system. Even though it's not the deepest system, this is a guy I think you can still believe in because of how good the defense is behind the plate. And when it comes to catching prospects, defense honestly is what carries the most weight. We do want to see guys that can hit. That's a differentiator. That's often a sign that a guy can handle the majority of time in a timeshare behind the plate. But if you can catch, and you can catch at the level that Ethan Salas does, there's probably going to be a big league role for you for a long time. It's just a matter of, you know, how, you know, outlier is the bat. Is it going to be a guy that's an average offensive contributor? Because if you can get to that point, JJ, I think this is a guy that's going to put up really big WAR seasons and be a really valuable player, whether it's for the Padres or for somebody else. But I do have a great deal of belief in the player defensively. It's just the question is the bat.
And I would say with the bat, this has been one of the tougher evaluations out there. They kind of did this a little bit with Leo DeVries as well before they traded him to the A's, because Salas has been, when we say the youngest player at every league, he's often been younger by almost a year or more than pretty much anyone else in the league. He's moved so quickly that that 2024 season was not great offensively. That's absolutely clear. He also was, you could argue, probably a level or two higher than Rob probably he should have been as far as, you know, as far as his hitting development. And so there are some tools here. There are some real tools. We have seen flashes of it. We have kind of, I think it's sometimes at the plate, he's had to kind of go a little bit into survival mode. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he does in 26. I do think that there's kind of more offensive potential here. We'll have to see if he can tap into it, but more potential than he showed, especially in 24. The real question kind of going forward is, like Jeff said, the defense is great, and that's going to carry him to the big leagues kind of no matter what. The ceiling is going to be dependent on how his bat develops. And I think the defense also gives him a little bit more kind of time to do that. I think that the defense is going to, at that point where you kind of make it, you're at a decision point, well, you're going to feel very comfortable with what he's doing behind the plate, which then gives you a chance to say, okay, now let's see how he develops at the plate. But I wouldn't be shocked if you said, if you asked me like a list of bounce back candidates in the minors prospect wise for 2026, Ethan Salas would be pretty high up there, because really it's an injury plague 25, and that 24 season that was at a level that he was really a very advanced level for where he was age wise and really development wise. If he goes back to double A this year, which doesn't, you know, seems crazy, but at the same time is not, I do think, you know, if he could just get on a roll, kind of get rolling along offensively, I think there's more potential than what we saw, especially in 24. I think the other part of that, Jeff, is we are not seeing him fully tap into the power so far, I think, as much as maybe we thought he would going back to, say, 2023. Is there power in there, do you think? Is that something where it's more of kind of using the lower half, it's more about getting the ball in the air, or are we not seeing the EVs that you need to see to think that there's real power there?
It's tough to know because they were above average for his age, but I do think there's probably a certain level of development that probably came a little bit early with Salas, which is why you know, he was as advanced as he was at 16, 17 years old, frankly. But I don't think he's without power. It's not the type of EVs that I look at and immediately shudder and think it's 20 power unless this guy really knows how to backspin it or adds a significant amount of weight. But it's probably more somewhere between 40 to 50 power. So it could be that he's a 12 to 13 home run guy. There's maybe a chance that there's a 20-ish home run guy lurking in there. I think it's somewhere in that range. He's not without power. But I think how it tracks, what the swing looks like this year, you know, what he's producing as a 20-year-old in terms of outputs, and if that's improved at all now that he's healthy, I think that's all stuff to watch before we really can come to any final conclusions regarding what the true power upside is with Salas. Because it's as you said, it's been a little bit of a tricky evaluation because he's been so much younger than everybody else, and then we had an injured year worked in there.
I want to see in 2026, going to see how he handles changeups, how he handles spin, because those have been some things that have been a little bit of an issue, although he does have some solid contact skills as well. It's going to be a very interesting year for the Padres. It's going to be a very interesting year for Ethan Salas, number one prospect in the Padres organization, and today's prospect profile. If you enjoy this, we have prospect profiles for all 30 organizations, number one prospect in each and every organization. If you enjoyed this also, we have deep dives also on the Baseball America YouTube page and on the podcast feed, where we have also wrapped up taking looks at the farm systems for all 30 organizations. Check that out and check out baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another of the Baseball America Prospect Profiles. Today, we are taking a look at the number one prospect in the organization. What do you get in an organization that has everything? Well, you get them Kyle Tucker, in free agency. But what you also get them is one of the best groups of outfield prospects that we have in the game. And that is led on our list by number one prospect, Eduardo Quintero, which leads... I would say this was one of the more interesting discussions, debates, because you could make a case for four different outfielders to be number one on this Dodgers list. Jeff, what helped Quintero, do you think, rise above Josue de Paula, Mike Sirota, Zahir Hope? Great, talented group of prospects here, but what put Quintero at the top?
Yeah, I think he's got a few things going for him. First, I think his age. Second, I think, all of those guys, for the most part, have fairly well-rounded offensive profiles. So does Quintero. So it's not necessarily a box that you could check in their favor over his. He's been healthy consistently, unlike Mike Sirota, unfortunately. So I think that's one strike against him and also being a little bit older. Then I think you look at his defensive profile, and for me, that puts him over Josue de Paula, because he's a guy that's going to stick in center field probably long term, is a very good defender out there. And then you look at the offensive skills, and we put together all of our statistics and data and everything into a single spreadsheet, JJ. You know that I color coordinate all of the different columns. He's one of the few players where it's pretty consistently red and pink, which is good across the board. There's not a whole lot this guy doesn't do well. The contact is probably more average than above average, but it's well above average swing decisions, well above average power for his age, really good angles. So all of the expected numbers are good. And then he's an excellent base runner as well. So I think you look at it and he's really a true five-tool prospect, and one that might have even climbed higher in the minors last year had it not been for, the amount of talent that they had, at high A and then also at double A. Because it's really just, even beyond the four guys we mentioned, there's guys like Kendall Jors, et cetera, that are pretty good prospects in their own right. They're on that Dodgers prospect depth chart in the outfield.
Yeah, you mentioned it, but one of the things that really stood out to me that we saw last year is like Quintero coming into 2025, there was real juice in the bat, but it was a lot of stinging ground balls, some line drives too. What he did last year, and the Dodgers kind of worked with him on this, is to get to kind of, get his swing without kind of really sacrificing a whole lot of contact. He added some loft there. So what we saw is instead of hitting a really well-struck single that, that basically screamed down the line or went over the shortstop or whatever, some of those turn into driving the ball to the outfield, driving the ball over the fence in a lot of cases. And so a tweak like that, he's still quite young, but we are seeing him already start to tap into the power. The thing that you mentioned here also is that this is a player, I'm not saying like he's going to be the best defensive center fielder in the Dodgers organization, because they've got some guys who are really impressive, but of this group at the top, of these four kind of elite outfield prospects, he is the most true center fielder, I would say, and probably has, the most defensive value, where that kind of does give him a very well-rounded, a lot of different paths to the big leagues. Again, whether that's in with the Dodgers or as a trade chip down the road. You said, when you look at him, the one thing we'll say, though, is as good as Quintero is, there is a pretty good chance, if Mike Sirota is fully healthy in 2026, or if Josue de Paula, who probably has the most offensive upside, kind of takes another step forward, it's going to be hard to hold on to this crown as the number one prospect in the Dodgers organization, not because Quintero is not really good, but because this is an organization where there is a lot of competition kind of that's going to be kind of really in spring training. We're seeing it like just figuring out how this all fits together, because they have a lot, as you noted, they have more outfielders, especially in that kind of high A, double A range, than they have spots.
Yeah, I mean, they were DH and outfielders a lot last year at Great Lakes because they had four legitimate top 30 prospect outfield prospects on that roster. So it was kind of, you know, who's in the hot seat, who needed a day off in terms of in the field. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of depth. And I think that's something that the Dodgers are famous for. Hasn't always been outfielders. Sometimes it's pitchers, sometimes it's infielders. But if you look back on the annuals of all of their top 30 rankings, and most of them, as we did in this offseason, typically rank in the top half of the league almost without fail, sometimes or most of the time in the top 10, there's always a lot of depth among certain positional groups, certain types of players. And, you know, I don't know if that's just a Dodgers flavor thing at certain periods of time, or if they feel like they're maybe identifying areas of that are, you know, a little bit under scouted or underappreciated. And I mean, you talk about this group, two of those players were, you know, acquired in trades in Zaire Hope from the Cubs, almost as a throw in. Jackson Ferris at the time, we thought was the bigger name prospect that got moved in that Michael Bush trade. And then you look at Mike Sirota, who never stepped on the field for the Reds and was moved. And we do know that Sirota was someone that was drafted out of high school before he ended up matriculating to Northeastern. By the Dodgers. So I do think that they have certain types of players, certain player types they've gone after. And recently it's been really tooled up athletic outfielders, and they got quite a few of them in the system.
If you're a Great Lakes Loons fan in the Midwest League, you are living right. Because as Jeff just noted, that was last year, one of the best outfields we will ever see. Like, not again, you can have an outfielder, but to have four outfielders like they had, because Kendall George, by the way, stole 100 bags. And then you had DePaula, you had Sirota, you had Hope. And then you say this year and you're like, okay, well, here you got, you're gonna have the number one prospect in Quintero. And then you're also gonna have Charles Davelin, probably, who is another outfield prospect and another name to know here. As Jeff said, the Dodgers really do like their outfielders who can hit and can provide other value as well. They're going to be loaded at double A. They're going to be loaded at high A. Check them out. And also check out more of the Baseball America prospect profiles over on the Baseball America YouTube page, but also on the podcast feed, because we are rolling out one of these for all 30 MLB organizations all through spring training. We are almost done with this. We are rolling along on this. So check those out. And please also check out baseballamerica.com for all of your prospect coverage, fantasy coverage, college coverage, draft coverage, everything you need in baseball. We want to give it all to you at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.